The Mad Money Machine, early February, 07.
I had a dream that a certain stock was due for a spectacular rise. So at cockcrow this morning, I jumped out of bed and put through a call to my broker. Fish burger, fish burger, fish burger, fish burger, and fries. You may have seen their act on the old Keith circuit. They're billed as the four fish burgers and fries. Oh, they had a great act. They used to read head bumps. Well, it's only natural that when Vaudeville died, they become stockbrokers.
Give me patience.
As I was saying, all day I tried to call the brokers to buy the stock, but your switchboard didn't answer. Well, when the market closed, I found that the stock had gone up 40 points. Well, 1,000 shares times 40, that's $40,000.
You were going to buy 1,000 shares?
I'm a plunger.
Mad Money Machine, named by Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine as one of the must-read blogs.
A disturbing quote from the Wall Street Journal editorial page last week. Half of all children are of below average intelligence.
We have to do better than we're doing, and we have to do it faster.
Thank you for joining me, Paul Douglas Boyer, here on the Mad Money Machine Show, number 51, sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. I got a full house on this show, a tool, an answer, and a guru. So let me get started. First, I want to tell you a story. This is a story that's been in several books and on several websites. So if you've already heard it before, fast forward till you get to the music. If you haven't heard it, it's worth listening to. It's about the investment banker and the Mexican. You see, an American investment banker was at the pier of a small coastal Mexican village when a small boat with just one fisherman docked. Inside the small boat were several large yellowfin tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of his fish and asked, "How long does it take to catch them?" The Mexican replied, "Only a little while." The American then asked, "Why didn't he stay out longer and catch more fish?" The Mexican said he had enough to support his family's immediate needs. The American then asked, "But what do you do with the rest of your time?" The Mexican fisherman said, "I sleep a little, fish a little, play with my children, take a siesta with my wife, Maria, stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life." The American scoffed. "I'm a Harvard MBA and could help you. You should spend more time fishing and with the proceeds buy a bigger boat. And with the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats. Eventually, you would have a fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you would sell directly to the processor. Eventually, opening your own cannery. You would control the product, processing, and distribution. You would need to leave this small coastal fishing village and move to Mexico City, then LA, and eventually New York City, where you will run your expanding enterprise." The Mexican fisherman asked, "But how long will this take?" To which the American replied, 15 to 20 years. "But what then?" The American laughed and said, "Well, that's the best part. When the time is right, you would announce an IPO and sell your company stock to the public and become very rich, which would make you millions." "Millions? Then what?" The American said, "Ah, then you could retire, move to a small coastal fishing village where you would sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take siesta with your wife, stroll to the village in the evenings where you would sip wine and play your guitar with your amigos."
Oh,
I've seen or heard that story told in at least 5 different places, and every time I hear it, it just rings so true. Maybe someday I'll rewrite it as Jim Cramer and the Xbox 360 player. Time now for that new segment where we get to one of your frequently asked questions, a segment that we call The Answer.
Staring you right in the face is the answer.
Here's one that gets asked a lot. Hey, Mr. Smarty Pants. And they all ask, hey, Mr. Smarty Pants. If academic research demonstrates that value stocks have higher returns than growth stocks or the whole market portfolio over time, why not put 100% of your equity allocation in value stocks? Well, for investors who define risk solely as the standard deviation of returns, it might be okay just to buy value funds. Do such investors exist? You see, most investors probably don't want their returns to be very different from everyone else's from the market, even if their standard deviation is no higher. Also know that value stocks don't outperform the whole market either regularly or predictably. If they did, they wouldn't be riskier. And we know that risk is the source of returns, right? So if you're going to be disappointed if your returns are different from the market as a whole, then purely investing in value stocks isn't for you.
Staring you right in the face is the answer.
Oh, that's Eric Vardaman and The Answer. We started off the show with The Groove Mine and Fist. And then after the Mexican fisherman's story, we had Soul Seeker and Playtime, all from the PodSafe Music Network. I talked about chapter 1 of Jim Cramer's book, Mad Money, Watch TV, Get Rich. Talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Chapter 1 was all about determining what risk level you're comfortable with. Well, chapter 2 is about how to buy a stock. And he says the only thing he hates more than not being recognized when he goes out is when somebody does after-hours trading on one of the stocks he recommends on his show. He says his show is not about stock tips, it's about analysis. And within the first 24 hours after you hear a stock on his show, here's what you should do. Don't buy it. Do your homework instead. He says, go look it up on the internet. Read the 10K annual reports, listen to conference calls, look at its balance sheets. Why? 5 reasons. 1, learn how the company makes its money. 2, understand all possible things that can affect the performance of that stock's sector. 3, examine that company's recent report performance. 4, compare it to its competitors. And 5, look at its balance sheet and cash flow. Now in my book, Paul Douglas Boyer's Mad Money Machine, Play Video Games, Get Rich, the chapter one's about the same. It says, take the risk capacity survey at ifa.com. And there's 3 forms of this. One's the short form. It only has about 5 questions, but it gets you most of the way to your answer. Or there's the 401k plan, targeted specifically towards that portion of your retirement investing. Or there's the complete risk capacity survey. And, you know, I do recommend doing this as your homework, taking that complete risk capacity survey. When you get to the end, it's going to ask you for your email address, but do not be intimidated by that. They may follow up with an email to you, but don't be alarmed by that. These are good people. They're not out to spam you to death by collecting your emails. And it is completely worth it to get the answer to this risk capacity survey. It's also worth it in getting the answers to those questions that you'll be asked. This is a learning process, and you're going to learn a lot by taking this risk capacity survey. Believe me, I know, I've taken it and I've learned some stuff. Well, buying stocks is the easy part. Selling stocks is hard. We're going to get to Jim's chapter within a few shows on selling stocks the right way. But next time, it's buying stocks step 3. How frequently do you want me to do these shows? Take a new poll I've put up at the website, madmoneymachine.com.
Hey, Paul. This is Mike in Brooklyn. I just wanted to let you know that your MP, your link for the show 31 and 32, there's something wrong with it. Enjoying the show and look forward to hearing those two shows as well. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Haha, I was wondering when someone would finally call in about that. Yeah, you know, I took those two shows offline on purpose because somewhere, somebody is automatically downloading those files like once every hour. And my statistics graph in Libsyn was just going crazy. Those two were spiking up and all out of proportion of all the other shows. And I don't know, I think maybe they still might, after I've turned it back on, they still might be continuing to download it. So I don't know what that's all about. But thanks anyway. It's now available again.
Hi, I'd like to ask you about the stock GILT. It's been going down lately, and I'm just wondering why it was going down. And I thought you could help me, so thanks.
That must be wrong number.
Hi, Jim Cramer. I have a question about SFHL. How is their performance? Thank you very much. This is Johnny from L.A.
That's definitely a wrong number.
Hey, Paul. This is Greg Farber calling. I'm one of your subscribers, one of your listeners. I just wanted to extend a personal thank you for your efforts. I really got a lot out of your program, and really appreciate it. And I got a copy of the Hebner book, and I was just blown away by, I know you described it as a coffee table book, but man, that thing seems to be a work of art, and I'm really looking forward to making my way through it. I'll contact you later via email. I have some ideas, and I've just really enjoyed listening to your program. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Oh, man, thanks, Greg, for that. You know, just like monkeys picking stocks or Cramer on Colbert, I can never get too much of your feedback. I love it. And the book you're talking about is Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. There's a link to that on my website that you can get it at Amazon.com. It should provide the backbone of everyone's investing philosophy, I believe. Now, Paul B. Farrell is one of the good guys in the investing advice universe. He writes frequently at MarketWatch.com, and he's got an article recently about the lazy portfolios. He's written a book about lazy portfolios and all this sort of stuff, and he compares several lazy portfolios and picks the winners of them. For example, the 3 and 5 year winner recently is the Aronson portfolio, which had for 3 years annualized gain of 15.4% and 13.3% for the 5 years. And then the 1 year winner last year was Swenson, who was our guru several shows ago. His portfolio gained 17.62% last year. Well, the thing to think about here is look at the IFA portfolios that compare with these. The Aronson portfolio, for example, had about 20% in fixed income bonds and stuff. Well, compare that with the IFA portfolio that had 20%. The portfolio number 70, dark teal, its 3 and 5 year performance was 15.19 and 14.07. Right up there, if not beating the Aronson portfolios. And against the 1 year winner, Swenson, His portfolio had a 30% bond weighting, so we go up against the IFA index folio 60 with the 30% bond weighting, and it did 17.12%, right up there with Swenson's, the winner. And remember that IFA states their results net of all fees. So, what's the bottom line? Let IFA even do the portfolio construction and rebalancing for you. That's a lazy portfolio. Let's go get our tool from the tool crib. Haven't got your Wii yet? Neither have I. But I've found a tool that can help me know when I can at least go looking for one. ps3seeker.com/we. It's a website that you can put in your zip code and it will show you where you can buy a Wii and when they'll get their next shipment. Well, I went out to the store last Sunday. Went out to Circuit City. I actually had a coupon for $40 off any purchase over $200. So I was all excited to go out to Circuit City and got there, and I overheard one of the store clerks talking to another customer about something that was going to happen at 12 o'clock and there were four and all this sort of stuff. And then I heard him talking to another customer about something that was going to happen. So I went up to him and said, "Can I get a Wii?" He said, "Well, it's 11 o'clock now. At 12 o'clock, there are four people that have vouchers to come in and buy one. If they don't come in and buy one, we're going to put them up for sale." And I said, "Well, what do I need to do?" They said, "Well, just be in the store." And so I kind of walked out of the store wondering, am I going to wait around for an hour really or not to get the chance to go up against all these other people that are in the store competing for their Wii? And I left and went to the Target next door and asked them, "No, of course we don't have a Wii." And I decided to go back to Circuit City anyway and just wait around. I'm not in a hurry, right? And talked to the manager. He said, "Well, we have two of them. And over there is the line." And he pointed. And I could see there were two people in line. And I went and stood as the third person in line for a while anyway. And I guess I decided that the manager was more right than the store clerk, and the fact there were only two. I could see them behind the counter there over against the wall. I saw my first Wii box. And I decided to go ahead and leave the store. I turned to the lady who was second in line. I said, "Do you have a coupon?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, it's your lucky day." And I handed her the $40 off coupon. So not only did she get the last Wii, she got $40 off. Well, good luck finding your Wii at ps3seeker.com/Wii. And other than having to buy the Wii, it's all free. Hey, here's an update since I recorded that little bit for the Tool in the Crib segment. It worked. I used ps3seeker.com/Wii, went out, found that they said that on Sunday, the 28th of January, they were going to have 20 of them at my local Walmart. So I called them up and said, "What time you open on Sunday?" They said, 7 o'clock. I set my alarm for 6:30, got there. I was 10th in line to get into the store. They handed out little sheets of paper to each of us. I was 10 of 18 that they had. And I got a Wii. I haven't opened it yet, but the thrill is in the hunt, and I've brought home the kill.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our main event. Are you ready to rumble? It's the Rumble Smackdown. In this corner, weighing at 100 kilograms, wearing red, it's the IFA Index Folio 100. And in this corner, wearing long sleeves and a necktie, weighing in at 155 pounds, it is the Mad Money Machine Board of Directors average portfolio stock picked according to the recommendations of Jimmy.
Whoever said investing was not exciting has not seen the Portfolio Smackdown. That's where we take 20 people, have come up with portfolios influenced by Jim Cramer's recommendations. We're averaging all of their results together and putting it up against the Index Funds Advisor's Index Folio 100 Bright Red. And there's also a home game version that you can play along. Just get an account at vse.marketwatch.com, virtual stock exchange. Go to madmoneymachine.com, click on that portfolios tab at the top to see details of both games. Here's the way we stand as of January 26th, The Index Funds Advisor's Index Folio 100 Bright Red has a total return of 0.8%. The average of the Mad Money Machine Board of Directors is 0.91%. So it is neck and neck out of the gate. Individual Board of Directors returns, Todd is up 4.64%, and Le Chiffre down 2.02%. So have you heard this podcast that's number one out at iTunes Business right now? It's Money Girls, Quick and Dirty Guide to a Richer Life. Well, I went out and listened to a couple of episodes, and one of them, she talked about writing down your financial goals. She did. She said they did a study out at Harvard and asked people, do you write down your financial goals? And about 80, 90% said no. 10 or so percent said no, but I know what they are. And 3% said, yes, I write down my financial goals. And she said they went back 10 years later and asked the people how well they've done. And the people that thought about their financial goals had twice as much money. The people that wrote down their financial goals, she said, had 10 times as much money. And then she said, and get this, she said, so therefore, write down your financial goals and you will make more money. You will be more successful. No, it doesn't work like that. The people that are motivated enough to write down their financial goals, they're the ones that are going to do well. The people that are not motivated to write down their financial goals, writing down their financial goals isn't going to make them do well. There's something fishy about the use of statistics there. Let's play a round of everyone's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. It's Warren Buffett. Oh, no, it popped right out of Warren Buffett and into Kenneth L. Fisher. Ken Fisher is the CEO of Fisher Investments, a Forbes columnist, and also ranks number 297 on the Forbes 400 Richest People list. And he has a new book out called The Only Three Questions That Count, subtitled Investing by Knowing What Others Don't, with Jennifer Chow and Laura Hoffman's foreword by James J. Cramer. And I'm going to get into a rather extensive review of this book. It's an extensive book to review, first of all. It's a book that I did not want to like. I started reading it, started liking it, and by the end, I don't know if I like it or not. So let's just experience it together and find out if we like this book or not. But first, since the review is kind of long and probably not one of my best efforts, I'm going to say that for those of you that don't want to hear the book review, that's the end of the show. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes something fishy to make a mad money machine. Don't forget to visit our sponsor at ifa.com. Please go out to my website and vote on how often you want a new mad money machine. And please dig me. Press the button at the top of the right of the madmoneymachine.com website that says dig me. Please do that. Also, at the very end, I've got another story about rollerblading and the iPod. Okay, now into the book review. Why didn't I want to like this book? Well, because Ken Fisher makes his money by managing other people's money, picking stocks for them, raking off the commissions from their money, and also writing columns about which stocks to buy and so forth. So, you know, I'm not sure I'm into all that, and I didn't want to like the book. So let me get into it. First of all, the foreword by Jim Cramer. In the foreword, Cramer says, Fisher has demonstrated that some things I believe aren't strictly true. I pick stocks. Ken says it's a sucker's game. And Jim also says, if I could, I would hand him my own money to manage. Also in the foreword, Jim Cramer says, if you're a hobbyist, if you want to invest for the fun of it, you can still get something out of this book, but I hope it will convert you from being a hobbyist to being a successful capitalist in one fell swoop. It's not really about enjoying yourself. It's about making money. Trust me, over the long term, it's more fun to be rich than to play games with your dough. It may not feel that way short term, but that's why we've got people like Ken Fisher who can humorously humorously tell us why we're wrong and what we need to do better if we want to actually make some money. Now, I have not read any of Fisher's other books. And why do these guys write books? Jim Cramer, why does he write his Mad Money book? Well, to get people to watch his show. Why does Ken Fisher write his book? To get you to invest with his firm. Now, he only selects clients that meet his minimum, of course. But there are several thinly veiled references in the book to why you should just give up all this nonsense and give your money over to him. So what is this business about the only three questions that count? At the start of the book, he says there's only one question that matters in investing. What do you know that others don't? And that's what the subtitle is, Investing by Knowing What Others Don't. He says, if you try to outguess where the market will go based on what you read in newspapers, you'll sometimes be right or lucky or both, but more often wrong or unlucky or both. And overall, do worse than if you didn't make such bets at all. And here's one of the crux concepts in the book. He says, we know pollsters can estimate the outcome of elections within a few percentage points. Well, what if they could do the same thing for the market? Suppose the consensus was that the market would rise next month big time. Could it? No, because if everyone tended to agree the market would rise next month, anyone with any buying power would buy before then. The market might rise before next month, but only a fool would wait a month to buy. Hence, next month there would be no subsequent buying power to drive the market higher. It could fall, it could stay flat, but it couldn't rise. Now, he says this is an oversimplification, but it's a useful illustration of how whatever we agree on has already been priced into the markets by the time we can articulate it. And therefore, it can't occur. Instead, it is surprise that moves markets. He says investing is not a craft like carpentry or doctoring. You cannot develop skills because you're supposed to know something that others don't. More academic study about finance or PE ratios or whatever won't do it. Instead, it's like a scientific query session. You have to ask the right questions, and Fisher outlines the three questions. The first one, what do you believe that is actually false? For example, do you believe that high price-to-earnings ratio markets are riskier than low PE markets? Or do you believe that big government budget deficits are bad? Fisher says if you do, you're believing something that's actually false. And he demonstrates the falsehood with charts and graphs. On page 7, he lists 11 other widely held beliefs that need to be examined. He says forecasting long-term stock returns is a near impossibility because stock prices in the long term are the result primarily of shifts in far distant levels of supply of equities, which in today's state of knowledge or ignorance, no one knows how to address. Now, here is why a high PE ratio is not any riskier than a low PE ratio. He says, turn it upside down. In other words, turn the ratio upside down, make it earnings to price, and you get the earnings yield. So a PE ratio of 20 inverted is a earnings yield of 5%. 5%. Compare that with the 10-year bond yield, and you'll see that U.S. equity earnings actually track fairly closely with the 10-year bond yield. And he says that we can see all around the world, earnings yields exceed bonds yields, and by more than in America. Stocks are cheaper globally in recent years compared to long-term interest rates than they've been in a quarter century. So what is it you believe that's actually false? Question two, what can you fathom that others find unfathomable? He says that when he gives an illustration of when back in the Stone Age, when the enemy tribe came in to attack, they may throw a rock into the bushes on the other side of you, and everyone will turn toward the noise in the bushes and thus fall to the attacking tribe behind them. Similarly in investing. Note, whenever everyone is looking in one direction, you should look away where they're not looking. He says, don't avoid the mass media. Use it to find out what to look away from. But don't just become a contrarian. He says, just because the market won't go up doesn't mean that it will go down. You've probably heard the one about the flat or inverted U.S. yield curve signaling recession. Fisher debunks this one too and says U.S. banks don't just lend to the U.S. anymore. It's a global economy. And the yield curve globally is not flat nor inverted. The presidential cycle, though, is real. It works because everyone else sneers at it. Therefore, you have an edge. Hey, and by the way, this is year three of the presidential cycle, which is the good one. So question two, what can you fathom that others find unfathomable? Question three, what the heck is my brain doing to blindside me? Basically, our brains are still in the Stone Age and learn to do what is called accumulating pride and shunning regret. Back in the Stone Age times, when you brought the big kill back to the tribe, you accumulate pride, which motivates you and go kill some more. When you do not bring the big kill back, you shun regret, which helps keep you motivated to go and try kill some more. We also inherited overconfidence and something called confirmation bias. Overconfident individuals own too few stocks. Confirmation bias helps perpetuate market myths, just like so many religious views throughout human history. The January effect, sell in May and go away, on and on, none of which are true, but we saw that they worked once, so we confirm them and believe them. Fisher's name for the market, TGH, the Great Humiliator. The market exists solely to humiliate us as much as it can, for as long as it can, for as many dollars as it can. He believes that we should pick a benchmark and compare our returns to it. He recommends considering the MSCI World Index or the MSCI All Country World Index. And by the way, I had an article about the new Russell Global Index out at the website. He goes further to say that all correctly calculated equity indexes get you to about the same return, the equity return, if you give them 30 years or so. Yes, you heard right. He says no matter whether you're looking at small cap, value, international, or whatever stocks, they all have the same return in the long run. Anyone that tells you different is guilty of doing data mining. To which I say, whoa. Even after picking an appropriate benchmark, many investors end up hurting themselves by trying to maximize return by straying from their benchmark. Like making bets on China or Brazil? Well, what percentage weight do China, Brazil, Thailand, Mexico, and Israel combined make in the world equity markets? Less than 1%. So don't overweight these in your portfolio. What else doesn't work? High oil prices do not hurt stocks. High federal debt does not hurt stocks. In fact, just the opposite. It seems to help them. So what drives stock prices? Fisher says it's very simple. Supply and demand. More demand at the same supply means higher prices. And no category of stocks can do better for all time. He says on page 256, that small value's supposed long-term superiority is somewhat of a data mine. It's in the data, but it isn't harvestable in a real sense. You can go through periods long enough to lose your mind where small cap value is the worst performing part of the market. Decades. Now, the game Fisher's playing here is he wants you to compare your portfolio to a benchmark and try to... he says if you're not wealthy, if you have under $250,000 or something, then you're basically just going to want to buy index funds. But if you are, if you have more than $250,000 to invest, he says you need a strategy, and buying no-load mutual funds isn't a strategy. And of course, now you have to parse this carefully. He says buying no-load mutual funds is not a strategy. Well, that he's not saying not to buy index funds. There's a difference between no-load mutual funds and index funds, passively managed index funds, right? He says, for the no-load funds, sure, you won't pay fees, the no-load, but you get no returns. And of course, we've seen that statistically, that active managers have not outperformed the market. Now, what he doesn't make a good case for is just investing in the market. He says, though, on page near page 311, also misguided is this notion of static asset allocation. It's fine for those who lack self-control, but you need to ask these three questions and be able to get in and out of the right stocks or the right sectors and make an incremental amount above the market return. Page 326, he says, if your time horizon for investing is more than 15 years, then basically you should be in an all equity benchmark. No bonds, because stocks over the long term have a greater return than bonds. So why be in bonds? His recommended portfolio, if you do have less than a quarter million, S&P 500 plus EAFE, Europe, Asia, Far East Index Fund. Now, unlike Jim Cramer, who says you need to do an hour of homework per stock per week, therefore you can own between 5 and 10 stocks, Fisher says you should have less than 5% of your portfolio in one stock. So I guess that means 20 or more stocks, right? Which in Jim Cramer's world would be 20 hours of homework. Yikes! But Fisher also says that stock selection is last in importance. Amazingly for this book, it's only in the last 20 pages that he actually talks about picking stocks. And I think he's trying to make a case for picking stocks because he writes a column in Forbes about picking stocks. He does say that instead of trying to pick an emerging market stock, you definitely want to go with an exchange-traded fund or index fund there. And on page 363, here's a sort of a telling statement. He says, I've done okay as a money manager. My long-term history managing money puts me in a tiny group of money managers with a documented long history of beating the market. You can view part of that in Appendix K. Had a typical high net worth individual invested with my firm in mid-year 1995, by mid-year 2006, as this book goes to press, your assets would have appreciated 231% net of all fees. And had you been passive to the global market, you would have done a respectable 131%. And had you invested in S&P, we would have beaten your index by 1.7% per year. All right, little Mr. Fisher, Mr. Number 297 on Forbes 400. Let's put you to the test. Let's go out to IFA and benchmark your portfolio. We go to IFA.com. We select the benchmark icon there in the middle. We're going to select the Index Folio 100 because you're into all equities, right? We're going to pick June 1st, 1995 to June 30th, 2006 and press calculate. And the IFA 100 had a total return of 273%. Compare that with your 231%. Maybe we don't need to ask three questions. Well, all in all, this book is different from any investing book I've ever read. It's not a pure stock picking book, but it's not a pure asset allocation index buy and hold book either. It's a book about trying to think different than everyone else. And you know how hard that's going to have to be. So I don't know if I like the book or not. I gave you a chance to read it. Go out to madmoneymachine.com and the Guru's page. I'll have a link to it at amazon.com. I got mine from the library. That's our guru for show 51, Kenneth L. Fisher. And now the story about rollerblading with your iPod. So I think I mentioned just on the last show, I have the rollerblades for Christmas, and then I was using my wife's iPod that I gave her two Christmases ago, and genius me, we all wanted to go rollerblading, so I put my iPod in my pocket and went with me. What put it in my back pocket because the front pocket had keys and I didn't want it to get all scratched up. So when we were demonstrating how we could rollerblade backwards, is when I fell. And of course I fell on the side that had the iPod in it, and sure enough, broke the screen. The screen doesn't come on. It actually plays still, but I just can't see what I'm clicking on. Made a trip to Best Buy. Got the 80 gig model. And hopefully I won't go rollerblading with it in my back pocket anymore. Thank you for listening. Please go vote at madmanmachine.com. Please dig me. Please visit ifa.com. Thank you for listening to the Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next time.